Good evening, everybody. It's Thursday, November 24, 2016. Thanksgiving Day in America. So, and this is the COS committee meeting. And I'm opening it now here at 9:06. And we're going to be talking about COS as well as other things that are going on in the nation. Okay, I want to start off before we get other people. I mean, I don't usually put a queue, but, you know, unless we got a lot of people want to talk, we might have to use the queue to keep it orderly. But anyway, what I wanted to say about what Chris Ann should do, in my mind, is look at, we're forming COSs in the counties. And along with that COS, we should be pushing National Liberty Alliance site and civics and constitution course for those people who want to be administrators to the grand jury and the juries. What Chris Ann should be concentrating on, maybe, I mean, this is just an idea. Donald Trump and his team, those people up there, they don't know the Constitution. I know they don't. She should be teaching them. We should be taking care of our counties, and she should say, look, this is what the president needs to know, and this is what the senators need to know, and however she wants to do that, or however she can do that. I mean, she could even, you know, we're already working in the counties, and we got a good constitution course in that. And not to say that the senators and congressmen couldn't even take our course would be fine. But, you know, she's a live person that you can ask questions to. And she's probably got her own ideas on how to push this forward. And if she's starting at the top, maybe that's where she needs to stay with those guys. You know what I'm saying? Wouldn't it be refreshing for them to know exactly what the frame? I don't think they know the boundaries that they're in. I think they're a lot of times they're doing things ignorantly. You know, I mean, not and look at some of these things are malicious, and you know they're malicious just by their fruits. But, you know, once you learn the Constitution and you learn civics, which is the proper place of government, then you don't really have an excuse. Not that they have an excuse, because when they take those positions, they take an oath. And what are you taking an oath to? A document that you don't know what it says. And nobody can do that, can embarrass them into that quicker than Chris Ann Hall could. So that's my thoughts, that she should, you know, if Donald Trump says yes and gives her a nod, she should figure out some way of educating first the people around the president and his cabinet. You know what I mean? I don't know how kindly it'll take to that, but you know what? She's of that stature, she could do it. And we need to be concentrating on the schools, the Common Core, putting it into the schools, getting our committees of safety, educating everybody on a local level. And I think that just kind of really goes with what the whole idea of the COS is. You know, working at a community level. That's where we're effective. Anyway, go ahead. Okay. Who was that? Nikki?
This is Nikki. I also like to interject here is that Sherman Institute, Aaron Bollinger, for several years now, has been having classes on legislative procedure. And the National Council of State Legislators has got up their parliamentary authorities under the Jeffersons and the Masons Manual. And different states use different rules when they convene, as well as the Congress itself, the federal. So this is very important for them to know the procedure that they are supposed to be using just by, you know, the authority that's been given to them, not to leave it to some attorney to make up the rules as how they're going to operate. This is also very important in the local levels, when people go to the people who are involved with the committees of safety, go into their local township meetings or their city councils to know what it is that is supposed to be the proper protocol for the people in charge, so that they don't overstep their bounds. So In fact, Aaron is going to be teaching a class on this come the second week of December. So his website is Sherman Institute's website is shermaninstitute.us. And when you get on there, just look for, call up what you want as far as legislative procedures, or not legislative, parliamentary procedures.
Right.
And the coursework will be up there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for that. Yeah, this
You're
is the
welcome.
Type of stuff that we should be discussing in this our COSs, and it's the kind of work we want to be doing. Well, it's the kind of work we have to do. It goes hand in hand with everything else we're doing. So that's great, and we'll see what happens here in the next couple of weeks. We're living in very interesting times. I have no idea what they're gonna. You keep waiting for the other shoe to drop here. That's at least how I feel. I don't believe that other side is going to go away without a fight and without a whimper. So I keep waiting to see what nasty trick is going to turn up, So seems like there's been a lot of different things in various areas around the country, like they're trying to get the pot to bubble. So at any rate, I'm thinking, maybe we've gained some time with this election. I mean, I still have no idea exactly where Donald Trump's going to go. But look at Donald Trump can't do anything, can't accomplish very much without the people, without us being behind him. And certainly, if the people aren't watching the government and taking control of the juries and the grand juries, then they're not having their input in the government, and then all is for naught. So really, the committees of safety and the common law grand jury, the trial juries and the unfettered juries are the answer for our ills. And whatever we have to do to get them back in place is what we need to be concentrating on. And whoever we can get to help us, and people like Chris Ann and Sherman Institute, and there's a couple other good ones in there. There's a couple that are more advanced, and some of them are, they can get boring if you're not up to the snuff. So you have to find what course you can take and follow through, and then you can move up to the other courses too. I mean, I took John Bagnarik's course, and that was pretty good. It wasn't wholly technical, but what he did is he cracked open your heart, cracked open the door so that you really understood what it was that to be an American and to be free was. And I think that's the name of his book, It's Good to Be King, and that's how he starts his. And that's what they forget, and that's what, even these, especially like police officers and stuff, they don't understand, it's the people. You're not some kind of an authority that you're above the people. I mean, that seems to be what's going on, that they have this, that there's this double standard. There's the standard that they have and the standard that we have. And so we need to be talking to them, and we need to be putting them in their place. See, the local police forces, it's up to us to educate them. And of course you want to start on the county level with the sheriff, empowering the sheriff if you can, and you're not going to always be able to do that. Not every sheriff is ready to hear this or ready to do this. But at least if you present it and he doesn't do it, then you know what your job is. Your job is to get rid of him and get somebody else in there. I know Robert Overuel ran, and he did pretty good, but he didn't get in. But the guy who got in, he has a good relationship with him. And so he's almost in maybe a better position to get stuff done than he would have been if he ran for sheriff. And they buried him in all this other work that they want him to do. You know what they do when you go in? They'll try to run you around crazy to keep you busy so that you don't get your agendas done. The fact that he's gotten in with this guy and he's outside, he doesn't have to be politically correct. He may actually have a better position to influence his new sheriff, which he's already influencing him. So that's a good thing. They make a good team. So I don't know if anybody else has anything. I don't want to just sit here and blab. So if anybody has any progresses or ideas or things, feel free to pipe in. I don't have the cue on, so just pipe in. I mean, unless you want me to put the cue on, you raise your hand and I'll get to you. But right now I don't hear anybody scrambling to come in. I think it's *6 and then 1 to unmute yourself if you're muted. I did not mute everybody, but some people have muted themselves, and I appreciate that. If you're not talking, make sure you're muted. So I don't know what other subjects we have here tonight. I'm certainly willing to talk about, you know, different things, being it's Thanksgiving and I got a belly full of turkey, you know. So if I start snoring, it's not the company, it's the turkey. How's that? So anybody else have anything?
Gerard, I heard that someone told me that Glenn Beck is pushing the current movement for another constitutional convention, and supposedly they're only one state away. And on the face of it, it sounds like a good idea. However, you know, you're talking about Congress, and they don't really know what they're doing. And, you know, that's, as far as I'm concerned, they're all ignorance and arrogance. And to say that they have forgotten their place is wrong, because really they've never known their place. So with this constitutional convention, I think it's something that we might want to keep an eye on, so that we can get word to them, if possible, should they try anything that might be subversion. You know how this one group is trying to do the, what was it, the Confederacy of States thing. I'm not using the right term.
Right now,
but
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's total subversion. You know, I attended that meeting, one of them, and it made me really uneasy. And I couldn't bear it for very long. But then, fortunately, John and Brent Winters came on and condemned it pretty good, though that lady was still intent on doing it. But anyway,
I think that was me and John, or me and Brent, doesn't matter. But
I think it was you and Brent. Yeah, you and Brent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a good, you know, I'm glad you guys did that. But anyway, for that reason alone, I think we should keep an eye on this thing that Beck is pushing, just in case it is subversion of some sort, just because, you know, everyone is so, and myself included, woefully ignorant to what true law is. Anyway, that's just what I wanted to bring up.
We do need certain things to happen, but we certainly don't need a convention at this juncture to make them happen. We have enough of the Constitution in place that's alive and well that we can operate with that and fix the country. And there are certain things that we don't need a convention to get rid of them. They just need to be nullified. They were unconstitutional from the get-go. There's no reason to go through a constitutional convention to repeal some kind of a subversive act that was put in, you know, mm-hmm. And you know, like the 16th Amendment, like the income tax or or the 17th, where they took the vote of the states away, you know, with the senators. And, you know, look at the 16th Amendment, you know, Supreme Court has said, you know, in the past when they first passed it, it didn't confer any new power of taxation. And they were absolutely right. Look, you're working with a bunch of alchemists practically. You know, they're smoke and mirrors, and they don't blatantly, you know, break the Constitution without trying to cover their tracks. You know, you have like Bill Clinton going, "What is the meaning of is?" Excuse me. That's the type of argument you get from them. So, like, the 16th Amendment on its face is not unconstitutional, I don't believe. But the problem is they make these presumptions and they put it on, they apply it where it should not be applied. You know, they tell you it's a voluntary system, and if you don't know what the meaning of taxpayer is, and where you stand there, you're volunteering in, and so that's why it's constitutional. Of course, they're using a lot of fraud. We need to address that. And it would be very easy to get rid of the 16th Amendment. We wouldn't even have to repeal it. All we have to do is explain it. Hey, folks, it really is voluntary. And if you don't fill out a W-4 or a W-9 that says that you are a taxpayer and the subject of the tax, and you don't really have taxable income because you're not a corporation, but they're treating you like you're one, you don't have to file income tax. What do you think would happen the next year? Boom, they'd be done. Right?
Yeah, totally.
Hey, Gerard.
Yeah.
But something so laden with fraud, something that has so much implicit fraud in it. For me, if common law is common sense, and I know at this point that it is, something so laden with implicit fraud, it cannot be constitutional. It's disgusting. It's a despicable thing.
They're not supposed to lay a tax on us that's graduated. The whole thing. I mean, we could go on and on and on. You're right. The whole thing is no good.
Yeah. Okay.
I just had one comment about that. When I watched Bill, my mind's blank. He was showing the laws that were the 16th Amendment isn't even a positive law. It was never ratified, correct?
Yeah, I think it even says in its statutes that it's not law. It's an administrative type thing. I think it's even written in there that it's not positive law. Exactly. I think that's part of Title 26 is income tax.
Right.
Right.
In there, it says that it is not positive law. That's what I'm talking about. They put stuff in and then they go, well, it's not positive law, but you know what I mean? It's like, you know, come into my parlor, says the spider to the fly, you know? And then the fraud starts once you get in there. So, you know, it should be gone to begin with. It's evil. You know, when they put it in, they said they were going to just use it to fund the war, and then they were going to do this, and they never did what they said they were going to do, and they never use it the way they said they were going to use it, and it ends up funding the interest on a debt. It doesn't do anything for infrastructure in the country at all. People think, oh, if you don't pay your income tax, how are we going to pay for all this stuff? Well, if you don't pay your income tax, maybe the government won't be getting into so much trouble all over the place, you know? But, I mean, it's just feeding the international bankers the interest on the debt, which we shouldn't even have in the first place, you know? So, anyway, we have a lot of work to do. I'm surprised Glenn Beck is so naive that he thinks we can have a constitutional convention and not end up with a disaster with the level that the people are at right now. They don't understand. And the whole a constitutional convention, I don't even know all the ins and outs of it, because there's a proper way to do it where you go in with a specific, you don't just go in and raise hell. You have a specific issue that you're voting on. So it's really not designed to rewrite the whole Constitution. They have to have areas. It's all stated out before they go in, you know? So I don't even know who's the experts on running the whole thing. And, you know, Bob Schultz from We the People has been multiple lawsuits over even a New York State Constitutional Convention, much less a federal constitutional convention. And his lawsuit says, look it, we should not have anybody that receives a paycheck from the government to sit as a delegate on the constitutional convention. Think about it. If you're drawing a paycheck from the government, how can you be writing the rules that governs yourself? That's a conflict. You can't write your own rules as a government official on that document that the people are putting there telling you what to do. So his thing was that he didn't want anybody that was connected in the government to sit on those. And you know, they put all, if there's going to be a constitutional convention, who do you think they're going to have on? They're going to have all these bankers and these elites. It's going to be horrible. I wouldn't trust them. I wouldn't trust them as far as I can throw them. And I don't know why Glenn Beck thinks that he's got any kind of control over this thing, or I don't know what his argument is, why he thinks we need it. I mean, I know we have problems, but I don't think that a constitutional convention at this point is the answer. You know? I certainly don't feel comfortable with it. So I don't know.
One comment?
Yeah.
Chris Van Hall did three series on the Constitution, the Article 5 Convention, and she basically explains that it would take years and years and years to actually change anything in the Constitution. And like you said, nullification on some of these is the best bet because these founding fathers had it so right to begin with that there's really no reason to go in and change anything because if they do, they could really radically destroy our country.
Yeah, and you know, we have the power of nullifications and we've been using it less and less and less. You know what I mean? It's like they want to get us away from that. And really, that is the answer, you know, on many, many levels. Jury nullification, you know, people nullification even. You know, I've heard of, I think it was New Hampshire. They put in an automobile inspection system, and the people didn't like it, and they didn't want to do it, and they refused to do it. And they had such a high rate of noncompliance, they had to repeal it because nobody would do it. And that's how you deal with laws like that. I mean, some states, I don't know that this is on a federal level, but I know that they're on a state level, and it probably should be true on a federal level also, that if you make some kind of a law or statute that people refuse to be bound by, then that's the same as the people have spoken. And you have to repeal it. You don't have a choice. When you end up with a 95% non-compliance rate on a law, I mean, I think that kind of shows that the law is written pretty poorly, you know. And we have that exact same thing right now with the New York State SAFE Act because they knew that they had X many million what they quote-unquote called assault rifles, which I use the term loosely, and they know how many of them were sold that they actually have a record of that should have been registered by the deadline, and they haven't been. And they also know that there's many hundreds of thousands of more that they never had track of, but they knew they were out there. They knew that they've been released from the factories and they're out in the street. And they know that an even lower rate of those ever got registered under the SAFE Act. So they have like a 5% compliance rate, and most of the ones that complied with that were law enforcement officials, and it's a felony if you don't comply with that. So if they're gonna, and I know that for a fact they have a 95% non-compliance rate with that law, that should be an automatic nullification right there. And you know, in order to accomplish that, the average guy in the street has to understand the word nullification, what it means, and how to do it. And the easiest way to do it is just start talking about it, get it on everybody's lips. Nullification, nullification. You know, of course, you know, if we could get some good officials in, we could even start prosecuting people, officials, I should say, that enforce unconstitutional laws like that, and say, look at. It doesn't matter that the law says this or that. You're supposed to know the difference. You're not supposed to carry out an unconstitutional or unlawful order. You're taking an oath. You're supposed to know the difference. It's not an excuse. So that's my feelings about that. Anyway, it just would make life so much easier if we just did use the tools that we have at hand and not try to reinvent the wheel here. So much work we could do just doing what we have. You know, I used to follow Glenn Beck a while ago. I mean, he was pretty good there for a while when he was pushing the 5,000-year leap. He had some good stuff going on, and I never believed that he was one of the people that were a problem because I couldn't imagine, because he did some really good education on his show. He did some really good education on fundamental values and fundamental things. And he used some pretty good resources. So I don't know what Glenn Beck's problem is. I mean, he's obviously got his sights in different places than we do. If he doesn't understand that, and he he should be pretty intelligent. I know Glenn doesn't get everything. He doesn't see everything because there's a filter there. He's got his top guys that he depends on, you know, to sort of, that he filters things through, because it's probably very noisy where he's at as far as what he wants to respond to. But that's still not an excuse, you know, for an issue as big as the Constitutional Convention. He should know the difference. He should know what the problem is. And I haven't watched him. I don't have time to watch all these people, you know, to really know what they're saying. I mean, there was a time when I was watching, given that I could tell you exactly what he was saying. But I haven't watched him. I got off his subscribe show about probably maybe it's more than 2 years ago. It's over 2 years ago, so I haven't really followed him in 2 years. So I don't know where he's at or what he's really doing. And I don't know if anybody here follows him or why he's so hepped up on what his
I don't listen to him, and this was someone that I know very well, and this individual listens to him, but all this individual told me was that, hey, you should check out this website about a new constitutional convention. They have 34 states. They think they're one state away. And if so, then they'll have a constitutional convention. And this individual seemed quite excited about it. And so I can only interpret from this person's excitement that Beck is somewhat pushing it. But I can't really say for sure.
Well, I'll tell you what, Glenn Beck has a fairly good influence in America. You know, he's not nobody. You know, he came up and at one point he had quite a good influence. I think it's waned a little bit, you know. Maybe we should get somebody to watch him and see what he's really saying, and maybe we should respond to him. You know, and we could do it as an individual or we could do it as a group. But, you know, I don't know what he's saying. And I know I watched him extensively early on he had been through a bunch of stuff. But at the point when he had the forefathers up on boards and he was scratching things down, he was going through the 5,000-year leap. And he was explaining stuff. It was very good. And I can't imagine that he would go through all that stuff. You know, he's calling out Bill Ayers and George Soros, and he's talking about the Constitution. Look, and he had to do that, their system, more damage than anything. I mean, that's why I don't believe that he's part of the top elite's plan. That doesn't mean that he's not doing something that's not good, or somebody hasn't got his ear and confused him, you know? So I don't know. I would like to kind of understand what it is he's saying that's getting, you know, he's getting people excited and probably unnecessarily so, and why. I mean, if he's part of their plan, maybe what they're going to use him for is a distraction from the real issues. Like, I don't know if it was you or somebody else just said that, Chris Ann said that it would be years before they do get anything changed on an Article 5 convention. So why would you get people all excited about that when there's things we need to be doing like today and tomorrow? And Trump's in there, and you know, there's way more important issues than that. Why keep the people, you know? And so that's what makes me wonder, you know, as far as what's going on with Glenn. Why would he waste his time and his effort on something like that unless it's a distraction technique, you know?
Yeah, and maybe, mm-hmm. maybe, and this is just a guess, but maybe, you know, I don't want to single anyone out or insult anyone, but this Nasara and Jassara crap, I just have to use that word because it's eloquent in this example. Maybe because, I mean, I've been reading the real Tom Jefferson, the real Ben Franklin, the real George Washington. And it's like you say, Gerard, it doesn't, you know, these people, some people have this idea that there's no way our founding fathers could know what we'd be going through today. But it's like you say, vice vice and frailty, it never changes, ever. It's always the same, 1,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago. It never changes. These problems are all the same. So from reading this stuff and just looking at history, you can see that there is always a certain percentage of the population, like it was in George Washington, the real George Washington, at the time of the war, at the time of declaring independence, Revolutionary War, John Adams estimated that a third of the people were totally down for their, you know, totally in, throwing all in for going for independence. A third would waver. They were on the fence. They would go one way one week and another way the other week. And then the other third were Tories, loyalists, and they didn't want anything to do with it. So just fast forward to today, and what I'm trying to get at here, hopefully I can make this point, is that there is a certain number of people, there is a certain percentage of Americans who look at something like Nasara or its new name, Jusara, and they hear this great stuff, and what it really says to them is they don't have to get up off their knees and they don't have to do anything. And so a lot of people would be swayed by this, but would it be enough? Anyway, that's just one of the negative things that I think that could come from something like this constitutional convention. Everyone, all these people who don't want to do anything and just want to keep licking the hand that feeds them, I think they'd be really into this kind of thing. So that's just the kind of thing I think we should look out for. But here, how about this? Did John talk about coming up with a more simple book from the court access course where he's going? I thought he mentioned this, but I might have just been thinking what I wanted to hear. Did he talk about having a new course where he's going to spell it out for those of us who don't have y'all's knowledge? Kind of spell it out for us point by point on how to go through the court and what papers and such. Did he mention that, or am I dreaming that?
No, he did. I'm sure he did at one point. That's one of his dreams. He's on dream cycle. I don't know when he's going to do all this work. You see, the court access, we took a jurisdictionary course that was taught by a lawyer that taught you about, you know, court procedure and motions and how to go into court and how to move the court and all that stuff, you know, and we paid for a course and took it. And then that was, you know, what we used to write papers. But, you know, that was the beginning of our education. And then we found Bill Thornton went to common law and realized that, you know, and the courses that you take from these people who are lawyers, they tell you, forget the Constitution. We got statutes, you know what I mean? No, they don't teach them the Constitution. They wouldn't know the Constitution if they tripped over it, you know? They're the worst ones of the whole bunch. So when John wrote the Court Access book, he wrote it more towards common law instead of all the statutory stuff. I mean, you have to know the statutory stuff, too, when you go into their courts, because you're going to get stymied if you don't at least know what you're supposed to be doing. And if you don't want to do what they want you to do, you better know what it is they're asking you for, and you better be able to argue against defend using a common law procedure, let's say, you know, over top of some of their statutory stuff. He did say he was going to simplify that book. He also said that he was going to rewrite the little handbook for judges, bailiffs, sheriffs. And because we had some stuff in there that was actually doesn't agree 100% with where we find ourselves now. You know what I mean? Some of the stuff that we copied and pasted out from these different places, we found that some of that information is not complete enough or it's not right. You know? And so he wanted to fix that little book. And I think it's very important that he fixes that little book first, because that's the one that gets out there, and that's the one that people first see, and that's the one that will hook them into even investigating our court access court. You know what I mean? You have to get them to the site to get them to take the court access, you know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, look, not everybody's going to take a court access court because not everybody wants to do that, you know? But I think a lot of people will want to at least wet their beaks with it. I mean, if you've got a case pending, it behooves you to know that stuff, you know? I mean, a lot of times you learn this stuff out of necessity. I didn't go looking for this stuff. I ended up being thrown into it because in the course of my everyday life, you run into all these legal problems, and who can afford a lawyer? And then even when you pay a lawyer, you find out that was the worst advice I ever got was from the lawyer, you know?
Yeah. You're fourth on their list. Yeah, that whole...
Yeah, and I mean, it's like, and they control them, and they tell you to shut up. I like being in the position I'm in when I'm defending myself. And as much as they try, the more you learn and the more knowledge you have, the less the judge will intimidate you, because when they understand that you know what you're doing, then they're scared to stick their foot in their mouth, and that's when it gets fun. That's where you want to be. You want the judge to be, you know, what do I want to say, respectful at least of you, because he knows you know what you're doing, and he also knows that you're not going to let him get away with any baloney. That's the main thing, that you know, once that, it's like he knows that you know that they know, then you're good, because at that point, he knows he can't go where he normally goes. He's not going to get away with it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's very important, just as a side. I mean, it's got nothing to do with committees of safety or anything, but when you're in court and when you're arguing a case and you're writing papers and stuff, what you should be educating the judge. Like, if you read our paperwork, it's all an education. I mean, the body of it is, but then the footnotes are even more. Because if you get a point, and then the footnotes are the rest of the Paul Harvey rest of the story. So you can't help but learn when you read our paperwork, you know. So excuse me. So
you
that's
know, right.
That's what you gotta be doing.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think that if you want to do the Juror's Handbook first, if you think that's important, then by all means, whatever poll you have with John, have him do that first, because I see what you're saying. That sounds like a good idea that you got about doing that first. But here's another question I have for you. A lady who spoke earlier, I've spoken with in private conversation, and I brought up this point to her about strategies, and I'm wondering if the only reason I hold back on any ideas that I might have about strategizing, about how to repel and repulse our appointed and elected officials, is because I don't want them to see us coming. You know, like Brent Winter said, beware the fury of a patient man. He was talking about General Washington. You know, he waited until he had the power to strike before he struck, when he was striking his decisive blows. And he wanted to earlier on, but he didn't have the wherewithal to do it. So in that same vein, I don't want us to discuss certain things because I don't want the enemy within to know what we're talking about. However, at the same time, what I'm trying to ask you is, do you think I don't know what was the phrase you just used to like wet their palate. Do you think it would help motivate more people if we did discuss some strategies as far as repelling and repulsing our elected and appointed officials? And I'll just give you an example. I'm at the DMV, right? And I noticed that a person to my left who's speaking to the attendant, the lady who's going to provide the documents he wants, I hear her say that, oh, it looks like you have an outstanding speeding ticket, and before you get this ID or license or renew your license, you have to pay this speeding ticket first. And I was thinking, well, you know, if we actually had any power, what I could do is just call the sheriff and have him come and arrest her and her manager for violating this fellow's right, Fifth Amendment right to due process. And these are the kind of strategies I'm talking about. I mean, these are just little ideas, but do you think that's the kind of thing we should discuss and maybe whet people's appetite, or do you think we should hold back until we do have the power to strike? That's my question.
Well, look, there's different hierarchies of stuff, and when people come in to our calls and they ask us things about traffic tickets, John doesn't like to get into that too much because, and he can, and we have, we early on we discussed that stuff, but it's kind of like you need to pick your battles, you know? What I've heard John say is traffic court, if you have the time and the wherewithal, it's a good place to practice your skills because it's administrative and it's much easier. You know, once you have the common law and you understand it, and things start becoming very much more in perspective and simple, and you're able to articulate them more simply. And of course, the more you know about their stupid system, the easier it is for you to take it apart using the Constitution and common law. It's easy to get lost in that, though, if you know what I mean. You know, I mean, these are things that people can do on their own, and you have to be careful when you're giving direct advice like that, because if a bunch of people went out to the DMV and tried to do something, and they say, well, NLA is teaching that, that can cause a problem, because, you know what I mean? And look at, we could close DMV down tomorrow. Look, if everybody that got a ticket would not plead and they say, no, I want a trial, it'd be
right,
done.
Right, that
one. It'd be done. Yeah. They got an assembly line of go in, take the lesser thing, pay the big fine, it doesn't go on your insurance, kiss my ring and be happy. And that's how they run this thing. And they even add, plus they give points. They're, make no mistake about it, they're working for the insurance companies. They're working for the corporations. They don't always let you off scot-free, you know. But they always put the carrot on the stick to get you to acquiesce. So you could do it on your own. If you always want a trial and you're going to defend yourself and you're going to bring this common law stuff in, a lot of judges, you know, we had a reputation. It was going around. I forget what town and state it was in. They said, if you pull somebody over and they're from National Liberty Alliance, the common law grand jury people, they said, do not write them any tickets that will bring them into court. They told the cops that. Then we don't want them here. Because
that happened? That really happened? That happened in New York?
Absolutely. I don't know if it was in New York or it was someplace up on the East Coast here. I don't remember what state it was. But they said, we don't want these people in our court because, you know, we made a lot of trouble in New York State because we sued the Board of Election. That's how we started off before we did National Liberty Alliance, because we were running for committee men, found a bunch of stuff out. And then we morphed into National Liberty Alliance when we realized where the problem was, you know, with the judges and the courts. So they knew us before that. And so we've sort of had a name. They call us paper terrorists and all kinds of other stuff because they can't answer our papers. So I think it was with the New York State Police. They said, don't write them tickets because, look, ultimately, think about it. Whether we're effective or we're not effective, the one thing we do is we slow them down. We mess up their whole mojo there when they got to answer us and we're answering on our own and we're not paying a lawyer, right? The DA has got to answer us. We're taking up the DA's time and back and forth. A lot of times they kick you out of court. They drop the charges because they figure they're losing so much money messing with people like us. They're not making it on the other end, right? And then, you know, if you tie them up enough, other people will get out of their tickets because they got to do certain things by certain dates or they have to throw it out because you the speedy trial thing. So I'm telling you, we could shut down. It would be such an easy thing to start a movement to shut the motor vehicle courts down. But that's not going to save your property from taxes and from illegal foreclosure, bank foreclosures, and all this other stuff that they're doing. You know, the reason that we practice in traffic court is because you normally don't end up in jail unless it's something like a DWI or aggravated unlicensed or something like that. We're talking about, you know, stupid tickets, seatbelt tickets and moving violations and things like that that should technically they could land you in jail, especially if you got in contempt of court when you were fighting them. But you can stop them by paying the fine and leaving at any point. And it's usually a couple, $300-$400. So what lawyer spends $400 to go to court, learn court procedure, do everything you could do in a traffic court. The experience and the confidence you get from that, it's probably worth a couple of grand or more, right?
Indeed, yes.
You know, I mean, I went to court over against Citibank and granted a credit card, and I won. And the judge kept asking me what I wanted, and he was like, I said, well, I want what I want. First of all, I want to see the contract that they claim that's there, which they didn't have. I know they didn't have it. You know, and he tried to steer me off of it many, many times. He practically tried the case for Citibank. and I just kept coming back, and they didn't give me what I wanted. And at one point, I even said I wanted the principles of Citibank, because they're, you know, it's a corporation, and a corporation can't sue a man. I should be able to question him. He goes, you can't have the president or the CEO of Citibank here. I said, why not? He's got me here. I can't question him. We're in a court of law. What are you talking about? I can't have him here. Then maybe he should drop the case. Then I want to subpoena him. You know, this poor judge had a headache every time I came in. You know what I mean? And there was one particular guard that used to sit down on the bottom. You know, when you come in the door, they check your cell phones and all that stuff, right? And you know, all the guards wear these dark uniforms, but the head guy's got like a white shirt on. And I noticed every time all these things we were doing were running out of the judge's chambers. You know, it wasn't actually an open court. You know, we go into chambers, and of course the guard is in there. You got to protect the judge. You know, you got a criminal like me coming in and sitting across the table from the judge, right? So this guy got so interested in my case, he made sure when I came in the door, he would immediately disappear. By the time I went up the steps and signed in and got in the courtroom, he was back in the judge's chamber. So he followed my whole case because he was very interested in it. And that's how you educate people, you know. And eventually, the judge ruled for me with prejudice because they made such fools out of themselves. They couldn't prove anything they said. They were so incompetent. Many times, multiple times, during that case, I was embarrassed for the bank's attorneys. I was embarrassed. You know how when somebody does something really stupid, you feel embarrassed for them? Well, that's the way it was. And what that does for you is it takes away all the woo-woo and all the smoke and mirrors and all this psyops that they got, that you're like this little thing, you know what I mean? So it builds your confidence. Look at these guys are just men, and a lot of them, they don't even know what they're talking about. They're drawing big salaries for doing nothing. Mm. So I don't want to go off too much, but you get the idea of what, you know, look at, you can do that in a community. You can do that yourself. I mean, we're looking to fix big things like foreclosures and land tax issues and, you know, illegal foreclosures and certainly illegal arrests. They're arresting people all the time. I mean, they're arresting people for resisting arrest. They're doing anything so ridiculous, you know, mm-hmm. And that type of stuff. So,
yeah, and I'm just talking about ideas for getting people excited. But no, I'm still focusing on, you know, what this whole meeting is about anyway. I'm trying to get that going. And so I'm working on that. I just, you know, for the idea of excitement. But I see your point, and it could easily be misconstrued, and then someone might think that it was NLA's idea. So, yeah, I see what you're saying. It's better left untouched at this moment. However, if we do it, I think you should be a chair on it anyway, because you have a lot of good ideas.
Yeah, I'd be willing to, you know, offshoot something like that, you know. And look, at you're going to go into it, because sooner or later, you're going to end up in court. Everybody does. And we had a great little video. I don't think it's up there anymore, but it was a stop the cop video, and it told you what to say when you went into court and questioned the jurisdiction. And it was a great video. It was a two-part video. I don't know if you ever saw what the
I did. I was up there.
Yeah, with the girl. Yeah, the trouble is you got that video left you kind of dangling of what to do. It was put out by somebody that was doing traffic court stuff. I'll tell you what, there are some very good sites on the internet, and I spent a lot of time, and I actually had a paid membership. There's a few places that I actually felt were valuable enough to pay for a membership, and one of them was Your Remedy Is in the Law. and they got a calendar, and they got guys that fight traffic, guys that fight, you know, all different things. And they do a lot of statutory stuff, but they, you know, they're also, you know, they know the Constitution, many of them, and they have some pretty good successes. And it was worth going into the archives and listening to the different, you know, guys that were teaching on how to do this stuff. I mean, you want to find out about a traffic court, go to Your Remedies in the Law and listen to you can get stuff for free, but for, I think it's, what was it, $15? I don't know if it was $15 a month or it was $15 every 3 months. It wasn't a whole lot, but you could go on the calendar and go back in the archives and listen to the class. Really, really good stuff. Really good stuff. As a matter of fact, I think anybody that has a problem, that wants to wet their beak, I would highly recommend that, you know?
Yeah, okay. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Anybody else have anything to say?
Hey, Gerard.
Yeah.
How's everybody doing tonight? You know, it occurs to me that the other time that you're not in as much jeopardy is when you're on the attack. And, you know, again, I don't think we should shy away from the old promised way and sort of thing. We all jumped on board. We're usually wounded warriors ourselves in some kind of case, you know. But then we didn't ask for this experience, but now that we're getting it, we're determined to make the most of it and be able to share it with somebody else. I mean, if I can teach myself how to do it, I can just about teach somebody else how to do it. And so I'm saying out loud to myself all the time, you know, here you've got these CPS crimes. Joe Stratton just came out with another just blockbuster heavy-hitting piece on what's going on out west in the courts and how they got a pay-to-play system where they're all in line to make, you know, thousands and thousands a month off these poor kids that have been yanked from their, you know, families, and then God knows what happens to them in the system. So, you know, extending your last week's talk about, you know, church clutches and stuff like that, you get those ladies writing some affidavits, putting the other side on the defensive, you know, these iron triangles and these judge networks of, you know, CPS and people, and you can start to clear the stuff up. And you've got the backup and examples all the way around the globe, especially in the Anglo-American countries, you know. So that's where I'm at on it. You know, we should be on the offensive. We shouldn't be worried about, you know, trying to just play in traffic court and stuff. You're right, Gerard, it's a huge issue. It has to do with our equity in our own beings and our property. Anyway, over.
Yeah, you know, the ugliest part of this thing would be, I think, in my opinion, is the CPS. It's disgusting, and there's every level of abuse going on. You know, right up to, you know, it starts with CPS and it ends with child pedophilia rings, and it goes right up to the White House, so we've discovered. So, just generally speaking, in a general community or city, you know, where CPS is, from my experience, and I mean, I was a homeschooler, and I belonged to the Homeschool Defense League for a number of years, and they're always emailing me cases that they have, and they have attorneys that do very well for homeschoolers. They win, you know, 98% of the times they'll win the case. And of course they hang heavily. It's the one area that I've seen attorneys that actually hang heavily on the Constitution and actually get away with it and hold their feet to the fire, because nothing they're doing is constitutional. You know that. But it's also a very, when you're in that system, you're in the heart of the beast. It's very dangerous, very nasty, and a lot of times you have, you know, pretty high people in there that will do anything in order to protect their little kingdom. So you have to be careful.
All the more reason to come in numbers.
That's where I was going with this. You never want to go in alone. And when when they come to the door, you don't sit there and wring your hands. Those are the people that they go after. You got to jump up and down like a mad orangutan, practically. And they right away they're sensitive to that. They don't like that. You know what I mean? They don't know how to deal with that. And they know that you probably know something, and maybe you'll get people worked up. So a good defense is a good offense. You know what I mean? You got to go after them. And you don't want to sit there and wring your hand. And then you want to go in and force. You want to make sure that you're not there alone. And, I mean, if they're sucking you into court, you definitely want courtroom observers there. Everything they do only works in the dark. So the more people you have, the better off you are. So if you could get that coffee clatch, the church clatch, that's perfect. Because those are, look, somebody has an injustice. An injustice, you know, you'll give up your rights for a time if for a good reason. But nobody will stand for injustice. They won't stand.
Well, also, when you see the writing on the wall, some of the most fierce people that I follow, you know, some of the folks over in England have somebody in their family that's in jeopardy or has been damaged, and they see the writing on the wall for their class. It's really class warfare, my friend. It doesn't happen to a certain set of upper middle class professional folks. It happens to the general rank and file, and they're too busy, they're too scared, they're too underrepresented, they're not represented. You get one of these bar lawyers, and they got way more business in that court than they'll ever have with you, and you're down the river in a heartbeat. And, you know, it is criminal.
When it happens on that upper level, and it does happen on the upper level, but, you know, those people have the resources to handle it. That's who the attorneys are working for, are those people that have, look, you get all the justice you can afford in this country. So if you're going in with the church group, with these women, a lot of times those women are from that upper class. You know what I'm saying? Boy, wouldn't it be nice to march into court with their own people they have coffee with on an afternoon on a Saturday or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Well, just go down the road to another church and you'll find another class. I'm saying, you know, this is the other thing that, it's Leo Stratton for anyone out there, and I highly recommend you just go look up his information. You want information about how the evidence comes together for all the Oregon cases and the land grabbing, the mineral sell-offs to so Leo Stratton goes into that and he says, you know, they're dividing us on every other kind of issue, and can you just realize that we're in this together as a class, as a middle class, and we have to fight back with every tooth and nail, and we have to do it right now. We have the tools, and LA had a system. I mean, I sent a huge docket into you guys. I had this dreamy idea, I guess you'd have time to, you know, really pick through it for the best things and you know, prosecute my case with me, but, you know, it's really on me, and I realize that, you know, we've got to get our education, our committee of safety things, but, you know, as far as picking up members on committee of safeties, I think this is way more powerful than the Oath Keepers or ham radios or anything. I'm sorry, this is a task in hand to do. You do go against a bunch of other people, but that's exactly who you need to go against. And I think it's a great equalizer, a lot of these churches. You get a mixture of people from different levels. And, you know, again, maybe that's not the place, but as soon as you could get a concerted effort in an area where you're having a really egregious problem with a set of judges, and you know that's the case in some of these places, worse than others, you know, get them the support they need. I mean, long distance, we could help people groom their affidavits, this type of thing. You know, just
well,
kind
me,
of...
Let me just say something. We've had some really meaty cases that we haven't followed up on because we haven't been able to, because some of the ones that were viewed, some feedback here. Harley, mute yourself a minute there. I'm having trouble. Thank you. where was I going with this? Oh, we've had cases that we, you know, big cases with blatant stuff. And then when we started pursuing it, what happened was you realize, especially over here in the Northeast, it's so corrupt for so deep that you don't have a sheriff, you don't have anybody that you can, when you start trying to fix this thing, they got you locked out because they're on five or six different levels in your community. They're controlling the whole thing. And it's very, very hard, because to try to work in that community to actually get an official, you know, where you're actually going to do something. Now, when you get a big case like that, that's going to require massive public pressure to make a difference there, because there's nobody within this sphere that you can go to enforce the law. You know, you need, ultimately, at some point, somebody has to step up to the plate. And those are the strategies we should be talking about. How do we take these guys who are in such horrible control and bring them into a court, sue them personally for what they're doing? I mean, they completely shut you out when they got the judge, the sheriff, the this one, the that one, all the way down through it. And it's unbelievable how this system cooperates with itself. I mean, look, we had that woman, Pamela Kilmer. They drove her crazy, and she ended up going to Puerto Rico and having a trial over there with a real jury, and they found her innocent. But yet, if she comes back here, they're going to arrest her. And this was, I think it was Pennsylvania court.
Well, have you heard this recently? I don't know if there's a signature case that's pushing that there probably is. The question of whether or not CPS workers are allowed to lie in court. Now, officially. Now, we know that they do, and we know that they cover for each other, and we know they have secret courts, and they have non-public courts. But again, somebody like Leo Stratton, who's cutting the way, and he's just telling you right to your face, here's the action items. We owe it to our constituency and each other to study this technique and this idea of evidence, because they're going in en masse, and maybe it's half a dozen people with another bunch listening from the wings and supporting when, you know, different verdicts come out and social media and then phone tree and then, you know, legislators and then whatever about a couple of signature cases, and it's going to ring some bells. Now, I say this because the timing is exquisite. The only one who's done mass media pieces on the pedophile elite and the iron triangles that sell our babies down the line is Australia. Look up Australia 60 Minutes. At any rate, you can tell by my voice I'm pretty serious about this. There's a lot of people around the world very serious, and they're also being targeted and gang stalked for their work. It's harder to gang stalk a bunch of us.
Yeah.
Putting that out there.
Can I make a comment?
Yeah, who's that?
Jan, Kansas.
Yes, go ahead, Jan.
That's what the point last week was, that the sub floor of the whole thing, we've gotten a break from God with all the exposure. We didn't have to expose these people. They've been exposed. Now our job on the sub level is to keep it, you've already said it, Gerard Harley just said it, is to keep talking about it. Keep it before the public. Don't let them go back to sleep. Nobody wants to deal with it. Nobody wants to hear what happened to those children, even the churches. Nobody wants to hear, but when we politely, you know, without being obnoxious, but when we keep bringing it up and keep talking about it, not incessantly, but bringing it up in conversation. This month, we say it in 2 weeks. We remind them in 6 weeks. We say, well, in NLA, in 3 months, we say, NLA, you know, we talked about this. Keep bringing it up. Bring it up this year. Bring it up next year. Bring it up, bring it up, bring it up. That's what us little bitty people here, the middle class at the bottom, can do, is just not let anybody go to sleep. And we just keep digging it, and we keep picking at it, and keep bringing it into the light. And I think, like what Harley's talking about, there are people, Leo or Joe or whatever, Stratton and Australia, there are people. I mean, we will create a wave that people catch on to. And I just really believe that. But, you know, like you said, Gerard, nobody can go out there by themselves. I mean, and Harley, yes, the gang stalking for anybody who stands up against these criminals, these pigs, you're gang stalked. You are a target, and a lot of us know about that. But it doesn't make any difference because they're wrong, and what we're doing is the righteous thing before God, and we need to keep doing it. And I just wanted to say that I just think that when we think that our words are insignificant, they're not. That's it.
Yeah, I had one point to make.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's have you ever watched the YouTube channel Abel Danger? Phil
Abel
McConnell
Danger,
was a
that. Yeah, go ahead.
Phil McConnell was a 40-year retired Marine pilot, and he has some great information on all the stuff you're talking about, but it's kind of a detective kind of, he plays it kind of funny, but he's talking pedophilia, he's talking 9/11, he's talking all of it, and he's got evidence for everything. And but Abel Danger, if you guys are interested in that, just thought I'd throw that website, that YouTube channel out for you.
Well, I want to wrap it all up into kind of a ball here. You see, we've been hitting both, we've been working on both ends, so to speak. You know, we've been kind of on the bottom and then back on the top. This is our opportunity. Look, they've been doing, and Glenn Beck talked about this when I was watching him, their strategy of bringing the bottom up to bring the top down, to close the iron fist. Well, now we have the opportunity now, since now we have the opportunity to bring the top down as we bring the bottom up. And that's exactly what we're talking about, you know. And that's what we need to do. And now is the time that we can do that, because the timing is right. And it seems like this has been the opportunity. One of the things was you were beaten. You know how much easier it is when you're on the bottom exposing this with your group of people. If there's something going on a national level, listen, these guys all talk. Once it runs through, it's as much psyops for them as it is for us. Once they see the people rising and our heads coming up, and we got a guy like Trump on the top that's maybe gonna put in some kind of a committee to investigate, boy, you're gonna want to watch them scramble. And we don't want to ever let up while that's happening. We fully intend to push on him as hard as possible. You wait and see this next paper that we're sending out to the judges and to Donald Trump that spells this stuff out, leaves it in no uncertain terms. That's going to make it much easier for guys like you, Harley, to go into your local courts. When the pressure's on from the top, they're going to get it way quicker than you think they will. This we have an opportunity now to run a shockwave from the top down. And as that shockwave is coming from the top down, we dang sure want to make sure we're bringing the bottom up in our local stuff, because now's the time we can do it, you know? And so however that works out, and I'll tell you, I would like to, I wish we could focus it in one area. I don't know that we can. It would be nice if we could get bottom up and top down in one place and have a great success, because we could ride that. That could be the beginning of the end for all this stuff, you know? And I don't doubt that that's what's going to happen someplace. Look, it's going to happen whether we make it happen or God makes it happen. A lot of this is not in our hands. It's due to fate. As long as we keep talking like, I'm sorry, what's her name just said? I'm drawing a blank here, the last caller.
Jan
from Kansas. It was absolutely right. Because as long as we do those things, well, this is going on. This is our opportunity right now. That's why that's what gives me the excitement to know. Look, we don't have a whole lot to hang our hats on, but we do. And in one respect, it's like, well, so what? You didn't do anything. Yes, we did. They suffered a major blow. And when you're in a ring with an opponent and you hurt him, you don't lay off that spot. You attack that spot. You continue to hurt it. And you continue, you know, if he's limping on a leg, you attack that leg until it comes out from under him. You keep going. And that's the opportunity that we have right now. And that's why the committees of safety on the local level, if you're, you know, like I said, you don't have a sheriff to go to, you don't have this. Look at if they're into every level of government on a certain local level, the only answer is a committee of safety. It really is, because you need that committee of safety, because that's exactly what they are. They're your safety. They're your safety net. And it's so easy to bring these local issues together and get people meeting on them, especially people who have been burnt by them. They're going to come, and eventually, you know, your local officials will take notice because they don't like people talking about them in meetings they don't have control over. Yeah.
You know, on a local issue like that, I believe Trump just all but hired the lady who's anti-Common Core, which, you know, our anti-Common Core is like our anti-vaxxers, a huge fan club. Hopefully most of the nation will get into. But, you know, that begs a question of what goes into place. Who's the authorita, right? Is it your state makes up a curriculum, or do we still test and do that nonsense, or do we teach the real history and the Constitution, or, right? So, you know, as Common Core is coming down, because it's not down yet by any means, there you go. There's another local nexus for concerned people. Maybe somebody who doesn't have the stomach for pedophilia and all that stuff, which is meant to make us turn us inside out, make us go away because it's so horrifying, you know. But at any rate, on that, just throwing that out there, that I just noticed the anti-Common Core thing in the administration. And so.
Yeah, and I don't. I've heard some good things and I've heard some bad things about that woman. So the jury's mm-hmm. still out on that. We'll see where she's
What's
willing
the
to go.
So.
What's that?
What is the complete post? Is the post on education or?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
What post is he considering her for? Is it the education secretary?
Yeah,
or?
The education department, which probably he should disband anyway. We look at the federal
say,
government.
That's a thing, right?
That's right. She's anti-Common Core, but she's still in the
devolve.
You get where I'm going with this. Well, you know,
yeah.
Look at. Oh, so we're gonna take the piece of poop. We're gonna spray perfume on it. You know, it's still poop. I don't care. So we have to figure that out. You know, and look at Common Core
is really a communist brain frame.
And it's definitely a federally pushed program because what they do is they push it by holding these funds out, and it's federal funds. So Trump needs to be educated. That's where we can't. We need to be able to get in his ear so that he doesn't understand all this stuff at the finer points yet. You know, he's really just starting to crawl. And I, you know, and a lot of people don't trust him, but I think that he's an independent thinker and he really wants to do the right thing. But he's got an awful lot of noise in his ears right now.
You know, who impresses me, and I think a lot of other people, is Trey Gowdy.
Trey is very good. Trey needs the Constitution more, though. Where they get Trey is where they tie him up with statutes, and he doesn't know what to answer. What Trey's answer should be is that, well, guess what? That's an illegal statute. You see, they stymie him with statutes, and he doesn't know how to answer them. I've seen him get caught when he should have went and killed.
Do we have NLA constituents in his state that might help educate and try to grab him? Because I think he's going to get a place somewhere, you know, don't
well,
you think?
They've been saying that he's going to get a place, and I think he's fearless, and I think he's very much of a lion heart. He has everything I've ever seen of him. I've never seen anything of his that I didn't like, you know?
Yeah.
And so we really should push Trump towards getting him, and I'll tell you what, he doesn't need that much. He just needs a little polishing. Not much, just a little bit. He needs to really understand the Constitution, and he really needs to understand how these statutes that they're using and how they enter into all that so that he can dance on his feet with them. You know what I mean?
Best stuff I heard from him was that, you know, it's not even enough to tell people the facts of what you believe, but you got to tell them why you believe it. And I think that goes for some of the principles behind, you know, constitutionally protected God-given rights and this whole, you know, sort of syntax or chain of custody that we'd like them to understand, because that principle affects every decision-making you make. And if you get the order wrong, it's like inverting algebraic operations or something, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's right. And, come on. Hang on a minute. I got dogs fighting over here. Hang on. Boy, there's bad.
Hey, I wanted to interject something about Trey Gowdy.
Yeah. Go ahead.
About a month ago, I watched a video of a doctor in Florida who did a FOIA act on Hillary Clinton's clearance on classified information in the training. And they accidentally sent him everything. In fact, he got a call from the people that released it, telling him they needed to delete it. Well, he kept it, and he actually called his congressman, who got a hold of Trey Gowdy and Chaffetz, and told them the whole thing, and showed where Hillary Clinton had signed the agreements for the disclosure. You know, she knew she was liable if she had disclosed any classified information. And you can see what that's done. They haven't done anything about it, even though he had firsthand information about it. So, just so you know, there's still things in the background there that Trey Gowdy and Jason Chaffetz aren't letting loose with.
Yeah, and you don't know exactly why either. I mean,
exactly.
I wouldn't pass judgment on them yet, because they're in a precarious situation here. You know, I think they even got to Ron Paul at one point and backed him up and told him, you behave yourself or, you know, we're going to go after your family. And you saw a big change in him. You saw him switch gears there, where he was fearless, and then all of a sudden he kind of backed off, you know? And so they have their methodology, and I don't know what they're planning on the top there. Like you said, you know he has this information. He hasn't done anything, but maybe the time is not right to do anything. You know, I mean, everybody said,
ago. I watched the video a month ago. He's had the information for over a year.
Yeah, but what was he going to do with it last year? Who was he going to go to? I mean, I understand
exactly.
There's people there. But, you know, there's been a group that have been watching America, have been planning a counter coup, so to speak. And they claim that's why Trump was able to get elected, because they had his back, these flag officers, these different people in the FBI and the CIA that are still loyal to the Constitution. And we have believed for a long time that there has to be some people. But yet we haven't found them. But now they're saying they're there and they've been working all the time. Now, people at that level, they have to keep their mouths shut. You know that. They cannot, you know, look at, they got people inside and governments inside of governments. And so whatever's going on, we don't know about all that. I mean, I'm not making excuses for Trey either, you know.
Yeah, you can look at if you want to go to the website, he actually got the website, hillaryforpresident.com.
You know, that's an interesting point, because whatever his reasons were, he's had it for a year. And you don't know that he didn't release it to somebody and it didn't go anywhere. You see, that's what I'm talking about, even with the NLA. We come into places and we try things and we get stymied and we don't have enough support there. You know, we don't have enough people to do a people thing. And so our hands are tied when multiple levels are involved in a conspiracy. You know what I'm saying? So then
right.
we have to stop. What are we going to do, you know? We're not going to go out and arrest them ourselves. That's crazy, right? So, you know, I don't know if he turned it to somebody, but he has way, way, way less of an excuse now, seeing the things that are going on. And if there is this group in the government that is working on a counter coup, then there's no time like the present, is there?
Exactly.
So, and that's why it's going to be very interesting to see what happens here in the next couple of months, because you may see all this stuff come to fruition. The fact that he has it and we know about it and it's online, that's enough right there to be pressure. He He should be very concerned right now. You know it, and now I know it. How many people know it? A lot of people know it. Something needs to be done. I mean, and if nothing's done, then it's up to us to start screaming about it, right? And exactly. I believe with the Internet, it's going to happen regardless. You know, as long as we have the Internet up and we can talk like we're talking now, it isn't going to go away.
Well, you know what, Gerard? The biggest power shift took place in 53 years in D.C. It doesn't make any difference what Trump says right now or any of them says. They don't have to play games. They have the lever. Trump has got Hillary under his thumb. She's done. She can't make a move. And they don't have to they don't have to play the games or you know beat their chests or anything. They are in command, and it's going to be very interesting what happens because, like I say, the Clintons, the Bushes, and all this had that dynasty. They don't have the dynasty anymore. The biggest power shift took place after they killed Kennedy. It's back. It's back.
Gerard?
Well, look, yeah, who's that?
This is Gary in Illinois.
Yeah.
I've followed the DeVos family for quite a while. I think she's very big into charter schools, and, of course, that's owned by the bulk of them by a Muslim. But in any case, I followed the DeVos's for a long time, and I just read a post a short while ago about a new foreign intelligence service is circulating in the Kremlin. And it states that up to 70 transport aircraft owned and or leased by the U.S.-based Frontier Services Group has begun departing the Persian Gulf Federation with their destination being the United States. And they are packed and loaded with all kinds of equipment. Anyway, Betsy DeVos ties in her brother, started Blackwater. Okay.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
Blackwater was started, of course, to contain ISIS. But evidently, two big billionaires over in the Mideast, one was Trump's developer over there, and they got in a war, and one of the guys that was involved with them had bribed Hillary Clinton through the Clinton Foundation because they controlled the media to keep it quiet. And so he broke away, and I guess now they're coming back here, and evidently it's to be involved with the blacks in America and the Civil War that Hillary's talked about. So I thought that was kind of interesting, the tie-in, because I was wondering how he knew Betsy DeVos. You know, she's not been a real headliner, but I think it was through her brother, whose name is Eric Prince. And says, a sudden movement of his private army to America in support of him brings into clarity that the leftist forces supporting Hillary Clinton know that Trump's destruction of their satanic Democratic Party has just begun. I have not vetted that, so I can't say it's true or not, but it was of interest to me because I knew the DeVos's.
Yeah, like I said, it's interesting times to say the least, right?
Yeah, and he sold Blackwater in 2010. They renamed it, of course, a couple times, and then he sold it. So he went back over there, and that's when he started working for this sheikh or whatever he was over there that financed everything. And, of course, Trump was tied in. And it said the Third World War is probably not too likely now because he'd like to develop that area over there.
Yeah, let's make money, not war, right?
Right. And then it said they could use the money that they were spending on the war over there to, you know, help rebuild the U.S.
Well, you know, we're just about decimated over here with our industry. We don't make anything here at all. Just about we depend on China, and they say, oh well, we'll be that we're the service industry. Imagine that. And I mean, not that's not valid in a certain sense, but when it comes down to brass tacks, and when you don't have any hard goods, no food, no steel. Those are the things that really that men need to rest in, really. You don't give them up for an office job, you know what I'm saying? They're telling us we're going to run the computers. Well, I feel much better with a hammer and nail in my hands, you know what I mean? I mean, as far as getting stuff done, it's great to be able to keep your hands clean and do all that real high-thinking stuff, but the trouble with that stuff is that it can disappear. You know, video stole the radio store. It runs in cycles. You know what I mean? And it's not, I don't know that it's not real enough for me that we should be putting all our eggs in that basket. You know, my goodness, we couldn't fight a war with another nation right now. We don't make a nut or bolt in this country. I don't know if you guys know that or not. I mean, I'm in the automotive industry, and for 20 years I have not been able to get any nuts or bolts, more than 20 years actually, that were made in America. So this world war business, I think it's all a lie. I think they already have agreements long, long time ago, and they fixed it so that nobody could support a war on their own. And I'll tell you right now, America certainly can't. We are not the most powerful military anymore. Whatever they're telling you, it's all a lie. What are you going to do? You're going to stop and say, okay, China, let's stop the shooting. Send me over some grade 8 bolts and this and that. I mean, it's ludicrous. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Look, they all got together. It's all about the money and the corporations. And they may even have a death ray up in the sky that they took the leaders of every country and say, come here, let me show you what you can do. And they drilled a hole in somebody's head that was asleep in bed at night. And they said, now go home and behave. You can play inside this box. Don't step outside it. Why do you think we haven't had a world war yet? I think that they're actually controlling this thing to the tune of a waltz almost. You know what I mean? It wouldn't surprise me anyway. And,
Was Gary saying that Blackwater's moving back over here for a civil war here?
Right. Yes, that's correct. But it's not Blackwater. It's another name. Let me see if I can find it here. He sold Blackwater in 2010. Let's see if I can find it.
I think he went bankrupt or something and then renamed it and started up again. But so that's the director, that's the Secretary of Education's brother.
Brother, yes.
Oh, brother.
Yeah. Oh, brother.
And he's an ex-Navy SEAL himself. And I guess the Blackwater was initially started to control ISIS. But then due to the pressure from the Clinton organization and the media, they came down hard on him. And, of course, that put him into financial problem. He had to rename the company a couple times. And then he sold it in 2010, and he moved to UAE's capital city of Abu Dhabi, where he took up residence in one of the first luxury villas built at the Trump International Golf Course.
Oh.
So he had the first house in there. And once arriving in the UAE, Eric Prince, who's her brother, created a secret army with the backing of President His Highness, can't pronounce his name, and whom, upon Trump's victory, sent to America's new president-elect a personal congratulatory cable wishing him success and progress in his new position.
You're breaking up.
Okay. Anyway, he sent him a congratulation on his victory. And he said, to fully understand why the UAE's president financed Eric Prince's creation of this secret army was due to a war conflict erupting between two of the nation's richest billionaires and their companies. And it erupted between these the UAE billionaire builder Mr. Saiwan and Mr. A. Hebtour, who Mr. Hebtour's secret financing of the Islamic State, ISIS, ISIL, and Daesh terrorists, and that he bribed, along with other Arab sheikhs, Hillary Clinton, to cover up by becoming one of the largest donors to her campaign through her money laundering organization known as the Clinton Foundation. Okay, and Mr. Sajwan, who's one of the companies, on the other hand, who is President-elect Trump's business partner, became alarmed at his financing the Islamic State and contacted Trump earlier this year, explaining the full scope of this plot and Hillary Clinton's involvement, after which Trump called for a ban on Muslims entering the U.S., and to which Mr. Hebtour responded by threatening that if Trump was elected, the UAE would pull billions of investments out of America. And I guess they control the sixth largest reserves in natural gas. And this Al Hebtour, his goal was to destroy Syria and Iraq in order to build a pipeline to the European Union. And I think that's all true. But anyway, it's funny what a web is weaved with all these people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Look how deep it goes, and you know, the truth of the matter is you know, you got different factions up there fighting. We don't even have any idea at the level that we're even talking about, and you know, it almost seems to me that you couldn't. If you had a guy up there that was less of a businessman than what Trump is, he wouldn't even be able to handle this. You know what I'm saying? I mean, right. he would seem to me, if he has an inkling to do good, that he's the guy that could do it. I mean, I think that, you know, America could take care of itself on the lower end. I mean, I would tend to look at, give us a couple of years as isolationists. Let's pull stuff back. Let's rebuild our industries. We have technology. We have energy that we could have for free. In 10 years, we could transform this country, you know? So I don't, you know, these rich billionaires, they're a problem. And I don't know exactly how we're going to deal with them, but they raised their own armies, for goodness sakes, you know? But are they going to be able to go against the army of the people here in America, the biggest militia force in the world anywhere? We're, you know, I mean, I don't want to think about that, but guess what? We have a very, very substantial militia force. When you're talking about the militia as far as every able-bodied male, then it takes into consideration that you have all these professional people that fall under that. You know, people that know how to do things, people that know how to operate, people that are inventors and engineers and scientists and stuff. You activate that. Look at that. You're going to wake up the sleeping giant, like the Japanese knew that America was a sleeping giant, you know, and they said that when they hit us. We just woke up a sleeping giant. Well, we're still a sleeping giant. We have a lot of potential. We have a lot of resources in our ground yet. We have a lot of oil. We have a lot of coal. We got it. And we have tech. And don't let them kid you. That oil and that coal, we can burn it cleaner than clean. There's no reason. We have the technology to do it. It's all a lie. It's all been designed to stymie us and hold us back. And we've been using the rest of the world's oil and saving ours. I understand that we have, 10 years ago, they said we have a 500-year supply of natural gas in the Gulf. I think it was 500 or 1,000 years at projected growth rates. And that's just in natural gas. You can run everything off of natural gas. And it doesn't. And natural gas is a very clean-running, fuel. There's a lot of things you can do with it. But we have hydrogen technology that's been hiding from us, and we have, you know, electricity technology that they've killed. And if we start implementing that in this country, we could be great again, as Trump says. Now, if he really has a vision to make America great again, he still needs. He's not going to do it on his own. He needs the people to be behind him. So I don't know where this is all going to go. We just stood here for, I don't know what time it is. It's getting late. I'm going to want to go here in a minute. But, you know, we've been around the world and back here in an hour and a half, you know. And I don't even know if we scratched the surface of it all. I mean, we have problems on local level. We went from CPS to millionaires doing their private army. And it wasn't, look at ISIS is a creation of theirs. I think ISIS is an Israeli connection, kind of trace. Look, they need the boogeyman, you know, and they're selling all this stuff on stuff that they're, you know, all this smoke and mirrors on the things that they created. You know, so I don't know. I mean, we're really going to have to pick through this and be very careful, you know. And you got guys like Glenn Beck that are calling for a constitutional convention. Does he know half of this stuff we're talking about? You know what I mean? I mean, where does somebody like him fit into this? You know, we got a lot of noise out there right now. So we have to concentrate and look at, from what I know in my experience, the more you learn the fundamental principles, the firmer your feet are on the ground, and the easier it is to sort through the smoke and mirrors. Learn the fundamental principles, stick by them, and you have the ability, because it's common law, common sense. I mean, we could even operate shoulder to shoulder with Trump based on that, because you can get to a couple of questions. You don't need to know all the nitty-gritty of how the gears work. You need to know the beginning and the end, and you look at it in light of common law and the Constitution, and it either works or it doesn't, right? I mean, are you violating any of this along the way? If you are, it's no good. That's it. Simple. End of story. We don't need to discuss what the meaning of is. And so I think that's what's going to save us, to be honest with you. So anyway, I think we went round and round here, and it's getting late. I'd like to go unless we got something... And that was good. It's good information to know that, because if we're going to be operating in this paradigm, you know, you got to know thy enemy. And these hidden things that are being revealed, you're going to get more and more of that, because we are in the time of awakening. And the thing is that we have to be careful is, I think that once people start becoming awake at a certain point, they're going to dump the whole truth on everybody to try to create the chaos that they need. And we cannot fall in that trap. Because when they start telling us all the things that they did and admitting to it, and they tell us, oh, look, even Pearl Harbor was a false flag, you know, you're going to have a lot of pissed off people. That's all I can tell you. And
it's to demoralize people, too. It's to make us feel stupid and hopeless and helpless. And like, well, how were we so stupid? And we just don't need to fall into that.
Look, at any time they have something, they look at it and they say, how can we use this? That's what they do. And we have to do the same thing. How can we use this? You know, I mean, they're not any smarter than we are. It's just that they've been in control. They've had their fingers on the control. You know, we gotta wrestle that wheel from them and turn the vehicle the other way now. And I think we can do it. I think we have actually more resources than them. We are much bigger than them. We outnumber them. We just have to get the word out there. The truth will prevail as long as somebody proclaims it. And there's a lot of lies out there, you know, and we have to sift through it. And we can't let them distract us, like you said, by demoralizing us. So we got our work cut out for us, but it's going to be very interesting, to say the least. And also, we have to continue to keep the economy up while all this is going on. So we'll see how that works. So anyway, thank you, everybody. I don't know if there's anybody got anything to say before I close off.
I'll just sum it up with one sentence. All their methods are failing, period. That's the right there.
I second that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Gerard, for the meeting.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Night.